Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. If you're ever looking to get behind the scenes, it's simple. Follow us on Instagram at TSN1050, or you will see myself, O-Dog and Noodles, what we do in the studio, before the show, during the show, after the show, constantly updating stories and best of clips. Again, follow us on Instagram at TSN1050. All right, MJ coming up here in a few minutes. He was down working with the NHL Network like he generally does, and they put forth their top 20 centers going into this new NHL season. I actually got an email from someone here at TSN today that it's time to start putting together your top 50 players list.
Oh, yeah.
I've been doing that the past few years. TSN unveils it before opening night of the NHL season, the top 50 players going into this season, which is kind of, it's a difficult practice because you get caught up, obviously, on what happened this past season. And you have to accumulate their careers. But trying to predict who's going to be at the top of the mountain this upcoming season, it's just it's almost impossible to do. Like,
oh, yeah.
No one would have had Taylor Hall and Nathan MacKinnon as your 1-2.
Not at all.
With Claude Giroux in the top five.
Not even close.
Nobody would have had that.
Nobody's picking that.
No.
Nobody's picking that. It's very tough to pick. You know, to our conversation about what does a regular season mean in the NBA anymore, and will the Raptors even care if they win 41 or 51 or 61 games next year when it's all about winning the playoffs? I mean, the NHL, you got to get into the playoffs. I understand that, and there's a lot more randomness. But, man, there's some years where you just, you know, what does it mean to guys? I mean, you know, it's hard to know. You know, it's hard to know who's really coming out, you know, with that kind of absolute focus to try and lead their team in scoring and get into the Hart Trophy conversation.
The only lock for me is McDavid.
Yeah.
Like McDavid, and if Crosby's still healthy, just turned 31, I think today might be his birthday.
Yeah, today's his birthday.
Sid's still in his prime. If he's healthy, if he plays 80 games, he's going to have a ton of points. He's going to be dominant. And I think Malkin probably deserves the same type of expectation if he's healthy, but he's had a lot of health issues throughout his career.
Yes.
So much more unpredictable in terms of what Malkin's going to do. And those are your top three guys, courtesy of the NHL Network. McDavid, Wood, Crosby, 2, Malkin, 3. I don't have any problems with that top three.
No. I don't have any problems with that top three either, for sure. But there's a lot of other guys that have snuck into this top 10, and we'll go over it, who a year ago you wouldn't have put in there. Anze Kopitar comes to mind. Mm-hmm. A year ago, he was coming off a brutal season with L.A. They missed the playoffs. He was nowhere to be found. Suddenly, he has a renaissance year, and he's a top 10 center again. Well, what will he be this year, to your point? I have no idea. I mean, this is a guy who's getting into his 30s who, you know, who knows where that team is headed and where he is headed as a player. A lot of miles on that odometer, for sure.
Yep.
You know, he'll turn 31 later this month. So, you know, he's the same age as Crosby, but does he have that kind of Crosby engine where he's just going to be relentless throughout his career? The 2016-2017 season suggests when he had 52 points. No, he doesn't.
No, and like Bergeron's another guy, and Patrice Bergeron's eighth on this list, and I love Bergeron. I think he's actually probably underrated, if not criminally underrated. Like, he is he's a lock first ballot Hall of Famer.
Yeah, but how can you say he's underrated? He's been on Team Canada's line at times.
But because he had to play a different position.
Sure.
Like, I would say that in and of itself is kind of disrespectful. This guy's an absolute stud two-way center. And it's like, well, you got to play wing with Sid.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Like, it's not that he didn't take on the challenge and perform. He did at the World Cup. He did at the Olympics in 2014. But he is, when he's on and when he's healthy and he's had injury problems as well, I think, again, an underrated guy. And at the same time, because I believe he's 33 now,
he
is coming off injury problems, I don't know what to expect out of him. And this is why we're getting into the conversation, because they have Austin Matthews at 4.
Yes.
And I understand the reaction. He's been in the league twice, 2 years. He hasn't broken 80 points. He's coming off an injury-riddled season last year, and he underperformed in the playoffs.
He did.
Like, there's no disputing that. He had a bad 7-game series against Boston. He did not show up. He did not play well. They neutralized him. But if I'm predicting what I think he's going to do this year, and you have to presume health. You have to. I guess you got to give 82 games to all these guys, because you never know how it's going to break. McDavid could miss 60 games where he blows his knee out.
Yep.
But let's presume 82 games played for all of these guys. I think Matthews is going to be a monster this year.
Why wouldn't you?
I think he's going to score 45 and probably have 85 points.
Right.
And I think his two-way game has improved drastically. And what he does 5-on-5, I think his numbers have been deceiving his first 2 years for a couple of different reasons. One, last year, again, he was injured.
Three different injuries, by the way.
Two, he doesn't play nearly as many minutes as these other guys.
That's very true.
So that's on Babcock, and he starts on the second power play.
Yeah.
Which, again, is on Babcock.
And that still may be true, given their center depth with Johnny Tavares coming to town.
I don't believe it will be, because I think that was clearly something that was causing a rift between the player and the coach.
Well,
it would take serious stones, and I actually would credit him for doing this, if Babcock has Matthews on the second power play this
year. Well, how many concessions can there be out of the famous dinner table meeting in Arizona with the Matthews family and Coach Mike Babcock over a glass of wine?
As 34 wants.
Well, no, I think there's got to be some give and take. So he's already, we were both shocked, you and I were both shocked when we heard the one concession that Babcock publicly revealed earlier this summer when he said that a guy named Zach Hyman will no longer be playing on the line with Mr. 34.
Right.
And that, to me, was probably on the list of gripes in the Matthews camp. I'm just speculating here. That had to be high on the list.
I would think who he's playing with, how many minutes he's playing, and when he's playing. That appears to be the most obvious public issues that we would know about.
Right.
And maybe issues is not the right way to label it.
Well,
but
they're issues. They are issues.
Yeah, I suppose. Concerns, whatever, whichever way you want to label it. It's semantics in the end.
Yeah.
Here's our TSN hockey analyst and NHL Network analyst as well, because he was a part of this top 20 list. Here's Mike Johnson. What's up, MJ?
What's going on, boys? Yes, top 20 list. Always fun to put those together. Never going to upset anyone when you put a list like that together.
No, flawless. I mean, everyone is so happy with your list. And
of course.
It sounds as if the Matthews at four took the most heat. I mean, is that what you were kind of picking up on via social media?
Yeah, I mean, of course, it's all, you know, so much of that comes from an anti-Toronto thing, not even an anti-Austin Matthews thing at all, but just people assuming, even though the NHL Network's based in the States, out of New York, people assume there's some sort of Toronto bias in there. And I think, you know, we're talking about the best centers right now going forward, not who had the best years last year, which obviously you wouldn't be on that list, but who's the best right now, who will have the best years going forward. I think healthy, confident, line mates, all those different things, it makes sense to put him at four because he has that kind of potential. But yeah, Toronto could be a polarizing team, no matter what country you're in, no matter what you say about them.
Well, you got Tavares at 10 as well, so two in the top 10, and I think that's probably about right. Like, Tavares has been in the league a long time, he's put up consistent numbers, he's always an all-star. That's probably where I would expect him to come in, regardless of where he was, if he was on the island, if he signed in San Jose, Tampa, etc. But Matthews at four, I'm with you. I mean, when you look at what he's made of and what he is, what he can potentially do on the ice just based on skill and talent and size and willpower and drive, that I think that's an appropriate number. And, you know, we listed off a few things before you came on that I think may have hurt him in terms of the way people would look at his Hockey DB page. Injury problems a year ago. We've talked until we've been blue in the face about his average ice time per game. He's way down the list. I would guess he's behind the other 19 guys on this list. And also the second power play utilization last year, where if he gets more minutes and he starts on the first power play, I think his numbers could skyrocket this year.
Absolutely. And I mean, it's not like they were bad before. I mean, they were still excellent. You make some good points, though. I don't know if his ice time will go up that much. I imagine maybe a couple of minutes here or there because he has other guys he's got to share it with. And you could make a case, and this is not a Toronto bias, that Nazem Kadri could absolutely have been on that list as well, given what he's done the last 2 years, given the defensive role that he plays. But, you know, I think Austin Matthews will play more, will play with different line mates. I don't know if he's on the first power play unit. And I will say this, I don't question Mike Babcock at all for not having him on the first power play unit last year because Bozak Van Riemsdyk unit was better than his. They were more productive. They generated more shots, chances, all those different things. But I'll be curious to see how that integrates Tavares, because I imagine Tavares would want to be taking the first 90 seconds the same way Austin Matthews wants the first 90 seconds. And will they be able to find each other and you know, find a way to make it work with each other on the ice as opposed to having to go one and then two?
Yeah, that's that'd be interesting, Mike. When you like, how much do you think just the trickle-down effect of having three really top-notch centers in terms of Matthews, Tavares, Kadri, how much do you think that'll sort of help each one, given the fact it's going to make the opposing coach's matchup job so much tougher to decide on, okay, who are we loading up on here, and how will those other guys make hay when we load up on one?
Yeah, I mean, I think good players like playing around other good players with good players. I think these guys are all astute enough, whether you're 20 like Austin Matthews or John Tavares, whatever he is, 28. You recognize that sharing the burden, whether it's offensively, defensively, is good over the course of 82 games. There is almost no downside to playing with other great players as long as there's no kind of petty jealousies that crop up, and I don't think there will be. The only issue will come in those high-leverage situations, and whether that's first power play unit time, whether it's 6-on-5, starting overtime, is all of a sudden now I don't get to go out there. That's the only time we're having this many good players could be troublesome for the locker room or for the coach or for the players. But beyond that, it's all good. I mean, the more the merrier, because 80 games is a long time. I don't think John Tavares wants to have to face checking units every game. I don't think Austin Matthews wants to have to check the other team's best lines every game. And the fact that there are other guys on your team that can do that very capably makes your job just a little bit easier over the course of 6 months.
With Mike Johnson, a TSN hockey analyst, and Johnny was a part of the NHL Network's unveiling of the top 20 centers going into this upcoming season. They had Austin Matthews at 4. They had Tavares at 10. The top three was McDavid, Crosby, Malkin. And even there, I guess there is some contention. Like, it still has been somewhat of an ongoing battle between McDavid and Sid. And it seems to change depending on who's going that night. But I had last year when we did our TSN top 50 list, I had McDavid 1, I had Sid 2. And the argument at that point was, wait a minute, you're putting McDavid ahead of a guy who just won back-to-back Conn Smythe. And I understood that counterpoint. But you look at what McDavid did this year. Not that Crosby had a down year. Of course he didn't. I'm all for Sid being number 2. I think he should be. But you look at McDavid, what he's done so far, and what he potentially could continue to do, because I still think his ceiling, he's reaching for it. I don't think he's there. I don't think he's hit it. So I think McDavid 1, that's the right call, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, listen, power plays are part of the game. So the fact that Sidney Crosby is much better on the power play than Connor McDavid and the Oilers, that's part of the equation. But 5-on-5, I think Connor McDavid, even straight points, were 84. Second in the league was 64. You know, that was 30-something percent more than the next best guy on not a great team. I think Connor McDavid wins a Rocket Richard, and he could do it this year. I think he's figured out how to score in the NHL and be willing to do so. He just generates so much more than anyone else. Now, I'm not saying he's better defensively. I'm not saying he's better in the faceoff circle, any of those things. But he is so much better offensively than anyone else. It's not really that close that it feels like he has to go one. And you're right. I still think he's figuring it out at the NHL level, line mates, Draisaitl, whoever, power play stuff. If he ever got all that rolling, you know, I don't think 50-ish goals, 120-ish points are out of the question. And we don't see guys get those kind of numbers anymore. But I think that's more than doable for him.
Well, you've been ranking the top 20 centers. I mean, is there anything to indicate in your mind, Mike, that Oilers team in general, and those of us who like to watch McDavid play, would probably like to see them succeed so we can see them play in some high-leverage moments? I mean, do you see better things for them in this coming season?
I don't know. You know what? I mean, the biggest reason for that to happen would be Cam Talbot plays better.
Yeah.
If you believe Cam Talbot is the guy, and I think he is that guy that played the previous 2-3 years, as opposed to the struggles from last year, then that's where they will get much better. I haven't seen a ton of personnel changes on the blue line. They're kind of nibbling around the edges. You know, is Draisaitl going to play with McDavid? Is it Nugent Hopkins, who was great at the World Championships with him, who looks like maybe he could be a number one winger now? Yeah, I mean, I think the goaltender makes them better, but I don't know if the personnel has changed enough to give them vastly different looks, except they got Connor McDavid. So give him a good goalie and the best player in the world, and they should have a decent chance of making the playoffs. But, you know, this kind of inevitable run that everyone thought they're going to take up to Stanley Cup perennial contender after, you know, the second year of McDavid, the first year of the playoffs where they had the fun run getting through a round and almost getting through two. I don't know if that trajectory is still going in a straight line. I think they're going to be stuck in neutral for a little bit.
With Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst, and Johnny, a part of the NHL Network as well, and they unveiled their top 20 centers over the weekend. McDavid 1, Crosby 2, Malkin 3, Matthews 4, Tavares 10. I don't know if you guys have come out with your wingers yet, and I don't know if you plan on tipping this anyway, but I would assume you'll do the top 20 right wingers. I got to believe Marner and Nylander are probably in both. Wouldn't they both be in the top 20 for you? Or
We haven't done that list, so I haven't put it together yet, but Marner certainly would be after his year last year, and Nylander probably would be there as well, depending how you categorize right and left. But, they're right around it. And that just, would Patrick Marleau be on the left wing side? I mean, I they just have so many good players there in Toronto that they got lots of guys that could be on this list for a variety of positions. And I think both those guys would find their way to the top 20. Nylander maybe right around the bubble area of it, but they have great players, and they all got to get re-signed. Hayes, what's going on with William Nylander?
I don't know.
We talk about Matthews, talk about Marner, but there is time. There's no rush. They have another year on their deal. Nylander coming out saying, "I want term. I don't want a bridge. I want to go, 6-7 years at $7 million. What did Evander Kane get? $7 million. Now he's UFA, but William Nylander's stats the last couple of years are better than Evander Kane's. Different kind of player. He probably wants 7 for 7 as well. Well, I mean, at some point they got to. It is August. They kind of get sorted out at some point.
Yeah, something's got to give here.
Hey, Mike, when you in your career, did you see dressing room issues when it came time to sort of split up the pie among elite players, whether it be the pie that's devoted to ice time or the pie that's just devoted to the cap room that's available? I mean, how often does that happen? Obviously, it never comes out in the NHL where no one ever says anything about anyone, but how much tension do you think actually could exist in a situation like that from your experience?
Well, I never had to deal with cap issues until the very end of my
career. Of course, yeah.
And I wasn't quite, I wasn't making $10 million. We're all just kind of slotted in there figuring out how the system works. But as far as ice time goes, you're talking about ice time and also line mates. Absolutely. And I'll tell you, I think I was in Arizona 1 year, had a great year. You can check whatever year Tony Amonte signed the summer of. I'm like, what the hell is Tony Amonte doing on this team? Like, they just signed a right winger to basically replace me. We had Shane Doan. Like, why are you replacing the second line winger when I just had a good year? Like, what is going on here? And, I grew to quite like Tony Amonte. I didn't care for that signing. I didn't care for the fact that he was going to be on the team because it was coming at my expense.
Right.
So, absolutely, firsthand, when I don't get to go to the power play anymore, I'm like, that's no good. I don't like that at all. And, I don't get to play with, Damon Lanco anymore. I got to play with Mike Sullivan. I mean, that's not going to be very good for my payday or my career or my points either. So, yes, now the good part about it now, Dave, is that these guys are all going to get paid. Like, I don't think money will factor into it because Tavares has been paid. If Austin Matthews wanted to, he would probably get paid before the season started. Marner and who, maybe. And so I don't think they're that element of it because they'll be locked in. But they're competitors. They want the responsibility. And there is part of the dressing room dynamics of that that is true. It absolutely happened. Probably more with bubble guys, like tweener guys. That guys that, Zach Hyman won't be too pleased about getting shuffled down lineup. But the main guys will always get the good stuff anyways, but it can exist if you're not mature about it.
Well, see, the linchpin in all of this for me is Kadri, because he signed his deal before he went back-to-back 30-plus goals.
Yep.
He's the guy that's coming off the power play. Like, if you're looking at a guy who's going to be centers, if he may find a way on there, wouldn't shock me. I think he probably should be.
He probably does. Yeah.
He probably does. But it's going through Tavares and Matthews. They are 100% getting power play time.
Oh, yeah.
100%. Yeah. The guy who's got to fight for it or the guy who's got to make himself noticed on the power play is probably Kadri. And again, all these other guys are going to get paid or have the potential to get paid. Kadri's locked in.
Yeah.
So he can't make any more money. He's not going to get any more ice time. He's not going to get any more opportunity. His wingers are going to be taken away from him because it sounds like Marleau and Marner, who he played with the majority of last year and put up big numbers with, neither of them are going to be on his wing, at least to start the year.
Mm-hmm.
If there's one guy who might have a gripe, it's right. Kadri.
Yeah, you're right. And especially, you know how coaches think, where we just come off the power play, who do we want to put out there? Also one of our best defensive centers. A really reliable guy to be available post power play, except the problem is Nazem's very good on the power play. So I think he probably works his way through there. And it's a weird dynamic, and I never signed for enough term, where you sign that long contract early on, and maybe 4.5 initially, given his production before that contract, was probably maybe a bit of an overpay. You know, like he hadn't maybe played well enough to get that 4.5 just yet. Now he's vastly outperformed the contract. But you can't be mad about that. Even though it's human nature to be, you can't be. I used to think Duncan Keith, when he was rolling through his Norris Trophy years, making 5, you can't get mad about signing that term. You accept the downside of being locked in when you accept it. So, yeah, that'll be a test. But I think Nazem Kadri has matured a lot in the last couple of years. And, you know, not only on the ice, but just, you know, growing up and figuring it out. And we'll be fine with whatever happens this year, because I still think he's too good not to get his, regardless of who he plays with.
Thank you, Johnny. We'll do it again down the road.
All right, boys. Have a good night.
There's Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Hurry into Maple Toyota during the Toyota 2018 factory event, where you can get rates from 0%. Find out more at mapletoyota.com. Of course, Johnny was joining us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. So there you have it. Matthews at 4, Tavares at 10. Like, I love how, like, Tavares is at 10, and
yeah,
people are just like, yeah, that makes sense, which it does. I mean, you can, it's all subjective.
It's totally subjective. I mean,
you could have Kuznetsov there, you could have Barkov there, you could have Stamkos there, but just based on the numbers he puts up and how consistent he is, the least number two center on the depth chart is the 10th best center in the NHL, according to the NHL Network.
Yeah, according to the NHL Network,
which is gospel.
Big asterisk there. nothing against those guys, but it's a few guys' opinions.
But also, to put it into perspective, the Leafs don't have a top two center in Pittsburgh.
Good point.
Right. So they got number four, number 10, yet their top guy in Matthews would be the number three center in Pittsburgh, and Tavares would be the fourth line center.
That's a good point.
So
that's a good point.
You know. It is what it is, as they say. But
it's
Kadri,
a fun one, though.
You know, Kadri having a conversation into the top 20 is an interesting one, too. I don't think he's there, because you look at Sean Couturier. I think Couturier had 40 goals last year. He's a two-way guy.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, Draisaitl, I still got a lot of time and faith in him. But
yeah. Yeah, it's hard to have any faith in anybody in Edmonton in some ways outside of McDavid, just because that team's been such a disaster. And it just reflects poorly on everybody that's involved outside of McDavid, who seems to stand above it.
As he should.
As Johnson points out, like, that's a startling stat. Even strength points last year. Connor McDavid, 84. The second best center in the league, Claude Giroux, nearly 20 points behind him. Even strength, 66. I mean, it's incredible.
No, McDavid's
he just towers above everybody else in terms of creating offense out of nothing.
Yeah, he's a beast. Joe Banner, NFL analyst, will join us just after 6 on the Hall of Fame speeches, the Hall of Fame debate over whether or not T.O. should have been there, and some other news and notes throughout the NFL training camps. And Steve Phillips will join us on what's going on with John Gibbons and the managerial pursuit potentially that will be ongoing come the end of the season. It's coming up at 6:30. All right, Joe Banner, NFL analyst, will join us in about 10, 15 minutes. I was at a cottage over the weekend.
Ah, la-di-da.
Yeah, pulled a pretty greasy move. We went to our friends, Adam and Christina's cottage, and we told them we were going to go up for a night, and we ended up staying for 2 nights.
Did you?
Like, they're close friends, and I think they were cool with it. Like, they were kind of advocating, why don't you stick around? But it was one of those moves. It was like, yeah, I don't know. Like, we're just kind of floating around in the water. It's like 2 o'clock. They're like, what's your deal, dude? Like, are you staying or leaving? And I'm like, yeah, I guess we'll stick around. Meanwhile, we've packed for like 7 days. My wife's on like her 5th outfit. It's like, yeah, I don't know. We may just leave after one night. No, the long game was to stay for 2. And we enjoyed that. But as a result, I avoided the Hall of Fame speeches, the football speeches, which I try to do every year. I'm not a big Hall of Fame guy.
No.
It's such a sanctimonious the voting and who gets in and who doesn't get in and all these unwritten rules. And Ray Lewis drives me nuts.
I wouldn't have watched that for $1,000, like, for just sitting there. You couldn't have paid $10,000. I'm not interested in hearing Ray Lewis speak.
Ever. No one spews more garbage than Ray Lewis.
Just garbage.
It's nothing. It's just a bunch of nothing.
He
thinks he's like a preacher. He thinks he's this guy who you have to hang on every word, and look how inspirational he is. And he's up there yelling. And it's just, I saw some highlights. I'm like, thank God I missed this.
I'm with you. I didn't watch the live broadcast either, but I sought out the speeches I wanted to hear, and of course Terrell Owens was the one I wanted to hear, and it didn't take place at the Hall of Fame.
Right. Yeah, exactly. T.O. decided to do it his own way.
And you know what? He was right. Like, what? When I first heard he wasn't showing up, I was like, oh, it's T.O. being T.O. What a delusional move. But the way he articulated it, you know, he essentially had it nailed. Like, your aversion to Hall of Fames, the politics of it, the sanctimony of it, the sort of arbitrary nature of it, because it is just a bunch of sports writers voting on it generally, outside of the Hockey Hall of Fame, which is another whole mess.
Where they don't tell you anything.
They don't tell you who votes, and they don't tell you why the boss, Gary Bettman's getting in while he's still the boss, which doesn't make much sense to me. But anyway, but T.O. had some principles behind that move.
We'll get into that in the 6 p.m. hour. And Steve Phillips will join us on the John Gibbons reports. Could he be out at the end of the year? If so, who would be the optimal replacement for him? That and more coming up. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050.